delay, but we had some technical problems. I think we can now formally open the meeting. This being a public meeting, I should firstly acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation, on whose country we are meeting today, their elders past and present. The next item in this public meeting is declarations of interest, and I'm not aware of any declaration of interest. It's usual when commencing these public meetings for the panel members to introduce themselves, and we should do that now. I'm David Lloyd. In addition to chairing this meeting, I chair a number of other panels. I'm a lawyer. I'm a former judge of the Land and Environment Court. I'm a former acting judge of the Supreme Court. I'm a QC, and I am a professor of law at Western Sydney University. Ms. Morrill.
Thank you, David. Jan Morrill, I'm a town planner of some 40 years plus, and the only work I do these days is sit as an independent expert or chair a number of panels in the Sydney region and sit on the Sydney Eastern panel, regional panel. And prior to that, I was a commissioner with the Land and Environment Court for some 14 years. And no conflict of interest.
All right, Mr. Hawke.
My name's Ken Hawke. I'm the community rep on the panel. I've lived in the inner west for nearly 45 years, and I've worked in local government town planning positions before my retirement for 40 years. And I have no conflict of interest.
Thank you. Mrs. Taylor.
Mary Lynn Taylor. Mary Lynn Taylor. I'm a planning lawyer and sit on a number of panels, both as chair and as an expert member. Thank you. No conflict of interest.
All right. Thank you for that. With that, we can now proceed with the individual items on the agenda, the first of which is the proposed mixed-use development fronting number one Parramatta Road, Haberfield. I have noticed that there is a number of people who wish to address the panel, and we will hear each of you in turn. I should remind you that the protocol which governs these meetings allows members of the public to address the panel for up to 3 minutes. The first name that I have notice of is Helen Barnes. Do we have Helen Barnes here? Is Helen Barnes online?
Hello, can you hear me?
We can only just hear you. Can you turn your volume up?
Okay. How about that? Is that better?
It's slightly better. Can you turn it up some more?
Okay. Always have this problem with Zoom. Okay. Audio settings. It's at max already. It's as loud as I can. As loud as I can get it. Can you hear me enough?
If you keep your voice up, I think we can hear you.
Okay. Well, I'm only going to speak for about 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes. So I'll shout.
All right, you proceed.
Thank you. So my name is Helen Barnes. I live on Hawthorne Parade at Haberfield. This is my submission. Haberfield is a heritage conservation area of state significance, and it is protected by the Haberfield Development Control Plan 2007. The objectives of the protective legislation are to keep the qualities which contribute to the heritage significance of the historic suburb of Haberfield, and to ensure that where new buildings can be constructed, they are carefully designed to fit in with the heritage significance and character of Haberfield as a whole. As residents, we have to abide by the plan, and we are very limited in what changes we can make to our homes. This development is completely at odds with this. This development is oversized and inappropriate, and obviously does not fit in with the heritage significance and character of Haberfield, and actively destroys the qualities that contribute to that significance. The Inner West Council's heritage advisor has said, "This proposal is not supported on heritage grounds due to the scale and substantial impacts that the proposed uses and the extent of the excavation will have." Also, the scale of the proposal still needs to be reduced to lessen the impact in terms of privacy to reduce the extent of the excavation. As the suburb of Haberfield has been proposed for state heritage listing, greater care needs to be taken in the design of the buildings on the perimeter, particularly those fronting Parramatta Road. The amended plans do not completely address and resolve these issues, and the development assessment report confirms that the application is non-compliant on heritage grounds. That these non-compliances may be due to the nature of the site is of no importance. The nature of the site is the applicant's problem. It is open to the applicant to make a smaller compliant sign. Haberfield Development Control Plan is not contingent on having a convenient site to build on. The rules must still apply. We completely disagree with the assessment on page 15. As residents, we agree with what the Inner West Council Heritage Advisor has already confirmed. That is, this development will have unreasonable impacts on neighbouring sites, and it will diminish the heritage values of the conservation area through unreasonable bulk and scale. The submitted plans show that this development is more than twice the size of any other structure on the street. It will loom over and dwarf the rest of the century-old, carefully maintained homes on Hawthorne Parade. On all the evidence in the development assessment report, this application should be refused. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Before you leave us, do panel members have any questions?
I have no.
I just wondered where this lady lived.
I live at number 19, which is directly opposite number 6.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I know where you are.
Thank you.
Any other questions, panel?
No.
All right. Thank you for that. The next name that I have on my list is Susie Stubbs. Is Susie Stubbs here?
Hello, I'm here, yes.
All right. Your 3 minutes starts now.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to read it out. As we all know, this huge and busy development is only nominally for its Parramatta Road address. In reality, all the traffic, access and impact will be on my street, on Hawthorne Parade, a local residential heritage street my family has lived on for 20 years. Lots of us here are long-term residents and this is a close community. We all believe this outsized commercial development will have a hugely negative impact on our local neighbourhood and amenity, which is why so many of us have objected. I was going to speak about these many negative impacts, and yet I see the report still says the proposal will have minimal impact in the locality despite all our submissions. Therefore, I understand this comes down to legal conditions. So it's disheartening to me to read the planning report and see confirmed that this development doesn't conform with many of the legal conditions. Some I note include building height, not within limits, offsets, not within limits, no real recognition of the huge traffic issues this will cause our little street. 23 units, 4 staff, extra staff for the car yard, a manager, laundry delivery, garbage trucks, visitors, Ubers, taxis, food delivery, customers, test drives, 24 hours a day. This won't be an 8-to-6 business, as they say. This is combined with a lack of required parking places in a street already struggling with parking, as documented over many years with council and with the roads, as has the traffic issue. So where will those extra vehicles park? In my street, in my car space. Someone has decided, though, that they will all be pedestrians using the oversubscribed public transport or walking in the already oversubscribed public space, the least of any council area. I also see the development is non-smoking. So where will those smoking guests go to smoke? On my street, no doubt. All this is on a dangerous intersection that's already overloaded with rat running from West Connects and about to cop proposed RTA changes to Haberfield, leaving it as one of the only ways in and out of the suburb. I was amazed to see the legal conditions on affecting Parramatta Road were considered, but not those on Hawthorne Parade. This is they're putting a blind driveway in at this busy intersection, where there's a pedestrian crossing that will endanger all our families crossing there. I note also that in the draft Inner West LEP, it says residential development in the Enterprise B6 area will be prohibited, but not yet, so this one goes through. The one that made me laugh though was the note that says vehicles for the car yard will be unloaded elsewhere and driven individually to the premises. This doesn't happen now. They park right out the front on that corner and for hours blocking people's driveways. What's going to change in the future? I note, as Helen says, that the Heritage Report doesn't support this plan and says it will have substantial impacts. Why get a Heritage Report if you're going to ignore it? The future impacts of this development will impact us for a long time after all this is finished and all these are ignored. This development seeks to profit from the amenity my neighbours and I have nurtured and worked for and fought for many years, the greenway, the light rail, heritage character and community values. We've had to submit to local planning controls. Why are they allowed to not? I'd ask that you reconsider it. Thank you.
Right, thank you for that. The next name on my list is Santina Piccioni. Piccioni, have I got the pronunciation right?
Piccioni, P-I-C-C-I-O-N-E.
Thank you. We have you online. You can proceed.
I'll just let you know that I'm going to run over my allocated time of 3 minutes, so I'll apologise in advance. I'll only focus on one main concern, which is the allowable developable envelope. Okay. Hi, my name is Santina and 6 Hawthorne Parade has been my family home for over 40 years. We are not opposed to development per se. However, development must be carried out under the prescribed guidelines of the LEP and DCP. The LEP and DCP must be respected. We believe the council planners have been hoodwinked. Refer to diagram on page 1. The submission indicates in red the breach in height limit. This is exceedingly misleading since it does not indicate the breach in the 22-degree setback plane. The diagram on page 2 illustrates clearly the breach in the 22-degree control. This was not included in the developer's submission. The proposed development has no regard to the 22-degree control. The 22-degree setback is a control for the purpose of creating a buffer between a higher height limit at Parramatta Road and the lower residential height limit in the Heritage Conservation Area. This control, included in the DCP, is for the benefit of the residential area. The proposed development totally ignores this control, with the developer stating the following reason. The shape of the land of the proposed development is in a different alignment to the majority of land on Parramatta Road, which would prevent the proposed development to reach 3 stories. Whether the developer is prevented from building 3 stories or 2 stories is totally irrelevant. The DA report states the shape of the allotment is the driving factor of the development's non-compliance with the rear setback envelope. This is unfortunate for the developer, however, does not demonstrate the requirement to relax the 22-degree setback control. Again, this control was introduced for the benefit of the residential area. It is an illogical argument for a clause 4.6 that unfortunately the council's planner has been deceived into accepting in their development assessment report. We believe the DA report incorrectly states, overall, it is considered that the development has been appropriately designed to ensure that the built form is stepped down to the neighbouring low density areas and that the intention of the control has been met. Please look at the diagrams and tell me if this is the case. The council's planner has been made a fundamental mistake in their assessment. The report only refers to the sections, refer to page 3, which is irrelevant, as no one sees a section in reality. They only see an elevation. It does not refer to the relevant east elevation from the street. Refer to page 2. The council has not assessed this clause 4.6 properly. In summary, in our case, the 22-degree control forms part of the prescribed building envelope. Council, you put this control in your DCP for a purpose. It was for the benefit of the residential area. It serves its purpose. Please stand by the 22-degree control that you created and don't be hoodwinked by smoke and mirror arguments from the developer. It remains relevant. If you take it away, it no longer serves its purpose. Thank you.
Before you go, any questions from the panel?
No, not from me.
All right, thank you for that. Now, is John Pichani here?
Thank you. Hi, my name is John, and 6 Hawthorne Parade, like my sister Santina, has been my family home for over 50 years. I would like to talk about the lack of deep planted buffer zone where it is needed most, at the front of the property. This required planted buffer zone has been replaced by a concrete driveway and a concrete wall. This provides a harsh transition into our house, the first house of the Heritage Conservation Suburb. The development assessment report has paid no regard to the council's own heritage concerns. In addition to this, the replacement of the planted buffer zone with the concrete driveway leads to other specific concerns that I have. There is a proposed intercom 8 metres from my bedroom and roller shutter 1 metre from my bedroom. I fear that this will disturb my sleep. I am a shift worker and often have to wake up at 2 a.m. in the morning. I know that my sleep will be disturbed, as there is no quiet way to use an intercom, nor is there such a thing as a quiet roller shutter. This issue would not be able to be conditioned out in the consent. However, the impact of issue would be reduced if the 3 metre buffer prescribed in the DCP was enforced. Thank you.
Any questions from the panel?
No.
No, thank you.
All right, thank you for that. Now, is Mr. Gerard Teresi here?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right, the ball's in your court.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm the consultant planner on behalf of the developer. Obviously, we support the recommendation of approval, which is before the panel today. I will address some of the comments that were made by the previous speakers, but one of the things I want to probably highlight is that the actual scheme, as before the panel today, has been amended. There were a number of concerns which were raised about the design to address some of the issues which the previous speakers have raised, and the scheme has now been redesigned to address those issues, such as privacy, height. We've done some redesign to the corner of the building. We've moved the lift to the west. So there's been a number of changes to address some of the concerns about bulk and scale. It's also important to note that given we're on the corner of Parramatta Road, RMS has been involved in the process. They've endorsed the proposal. They've raised no objections. For obvious reasons, the driveway is at the furthest point from the corner of Parramatta Road. And also, it's important to note there's already a KR there, which has actually been there since 1964. So it's been a long history of that activity on that site. But the driveway is currently in that location, so fundamentally the current interface and relationship has pretty much stayed the same. I think it's also important to note that the council's design excellence panel, the architectural excellence panel, has also reviewed the scheme and they are now satisfied with the proposal as well. So I think that goes a long way to reinforce that there's been a general support of the application and that we have made changes to address concerns which have been raised. Yes, there is a breach to the height control. There is on the plans an envelope control. You'll see that the breach in height is fundamentally to the corner of Parramatta Road and Hawthorne Parade. That's fundamentally due to the fall of the land and obviously trying to facilitate a workable floor plate in terms of that motor showroom. So the breach is not in terms of floor space per se. It is the slab thickness of the building and a parapet. Now, that parapet element's not on the edge of the building. It's actually stepped back from the building. So it appears to be a larger breach than what would otherwise be reality because you're not going to read the parapet, which is stepped back. In terms of the envelope control, it is actually in the council's DCP, and the objectives of that is to deal with the bulk and scale. And there's a series of images which are in the drawings which were submitted with the plans, which show three areas. And you'll notice that the building is actually stepped to that boundary. So we've actually maintained the spirit of the actual control. The actual top level being the second story is set back in the order of around 8.3 metres from the northern boundary. And then it sort of steps down where the ground level is actually at 3 metres, which is the motor showroom. So we've certainly met that in intent in terms of the objectives of the actual envelope control, as officer's report clearly has demonstrated. Panel, as you probably would have noticed being to the site, the whole site is currently hard paved. It's an open motor showroom with a small area which is enclosed, which has a number of cars in the building. There's no landscaping at all at the moment on the site. It's our view that although we don't provide deep soil planting, we actually have provided a planter box which actually has a soil depth of 900, a whole length of 3 metres. And as the officers have rightly picked up, with 900 millimetres of soil depth, we can get vegetation of a significance along that boundary, again, meeting the intent of the control. So we actually believe that there will be an improvement to the interface between the subject development and the adjoining property.
Sorry, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
All right. The panel has to have an understanding of what's proposed, so you can proceed, Mr. Teresi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Look, I think that's probably in terms of picking up the key points which were raised. That's pretty much it, Mr. Chair. As I said, the report in our view is quite a comprehensive report. We've dealt with issues of privacy. We've got appropriate treatment on the buildings in terms of the way it interfaces with appropriate obscure glazing. There's no impact on the ground level because fundamentally the landscaping and 1.8 metre high fence on the boundary would protect the ground level. The upper level, the first floor does have a number of windows, but we've got obscure glazing at 1.5 with the upper part of the window open. And then on the top level, there's a setback of 8.3 metres. And again, we do have a planter box running along the corridor edge. And that's to the corridor edge. That's not actually to the building. The building's actually set back a little bit further than that as well. But the point is that once you get to that level and you can see the 3D images on the architectural plans, that level fundamentally looks over the adjoining property to the north. There's no overshadowing because obviously we're to the south of all those properties and therefore all the shadow has been cast onto Parramatta Road and Hawthorne Parade. It's also important to note we are on Parramatta Road. This site is not in a conservation area. We're not a heritage item. There is other development, and you would have seen the Mary Lux development, which obviously is a scale, has a bulk and scale, which is larger with respect than what we're proposing. And therefore, we don't see that this building is necessary out of context of development along the Parramatta Road corridor. I guess that's probably it in terms of summarising. There are two conditions we would like to speak to the panel about. We're generally happy with the conditions, but if the panel has any questions, I'm happy to answer those, and maybe towards the end, we can talk about the two particular conditions we would like to address.
All right, panel members, any questions?
Yes, if I may. Picking up on one of the residents' comments, Ms. Stubbs, I understand that the current consent has conditions placed upon it regarding vehicle deliveries by multi-vehicle transporters being prohibited. Yep. The council officers have recommended a similar condition with this application. It appears, however, that this condition is being breached. So what confidence can the panel have that this unsatisfactory situation does not continue?
In terms of addressing that, the reality is that this operation is one which is, it deals with used cars. The actual cars are fundamentally European cars in terms of what the operator utilises. And given they're second hand, in most instances, the cars are actually driven to the site. It's not a significant motor showroom in terms of scale. It's not a new car dealership as such. Cars are definitely driven, and they are, and the contract arrangement for delivery of cars generally occur on a tabletop, and that's what the owner has always reinforced in terms of the motor showroom. To be honest with you, this year has been a little bit different, as the panel might appreciate, with COVID-19. There has been a limitation for the motor dealers who previously could turn up to auctions to look at cars and bring cars back to the site. Has now been prohibited. And so cars are being delivered on, and at times there have been some instances where vehicles have been brought on a vehicle which might carry two or three vehicles. But that's been because of the circumstances of COVID, but that certainly is not the practice of the motor showroom. The other important thing to acknowledge that previously across the road there was another car yard, and they at times they dealt with new cars, would actually have trailers which were not related to ourselves. And I know at the moment I think Uber is now currently got a depot there, and we also understand that they will sometimes bring cars on trailers, and they're not even associated with our use. And I know our client who operates his business has had situations where their own trailer has been blocking his driveway, getting vehicles off. So as a general rule and a general principle, cars are delivered on a flat top, and that is the general approach. At the moment, the car yard could at maximum probably fit 45 cars at the moment. With this development, it's actually going to be reduced because it's only confined within the building to probably only around 20 to 25 car spaces. So the scale of the actual motor showroom will be reduced quite significantly. So in my view, I don't see long term, once we get through the COVID-19 restrictions in terms of delivery and accessing cars, that the current situations which may have occurred won't apply.
Thank you. Just picking up on one of the other issues that one of the residents brought up, the 3 metre wide deep soil landscape is a, as you say, a planter box. Yes. But the indications are that it is also going to have access by the service department people who are staying there. Can you elaborate on how it's envisaged that this space will be used, especially given that it's adjacent to the property, the residential property next door?
Panel member, if I can probably refer you to the ground floor plan, you will see that the majority of the floor area on the ground floor is the motor showroom. The motor showroom does have glazing, which faces the north, but they're high-level windows, which the officer's report acknowledged, so we don't believe there would be a privacy impact in that regard. The actual plans does then have to show the lobby on the western side to the actual service apartment where there's a reception. There is a sliding door, and there's a number of pavers, but that sliding door, it's not to access that area from a usability point of view. It just enables us from a maintenance point of view to actually access that planter box, because as you probably appreciate, it sits above the driveway. So we designed it in a way where there's an ability from an amenity point of view to take the benefit of that landscaping, providing some sort of interface with that lobby area visually, but it's also a sliding door there. It's more about getting access to that area for maintenance purposes long term. It's not there to be as a usable space.
Well, Mr. Teresi, thanks for that comment, but it does conflict with the plan of management regulation or things. But anyway, what you're saying is that if the panel were disposed to putting a condition about it not having access only for service, you wouldn't have a problem with that.
Absolutely not. There's no intention at all for that place to be used for any active or passive recreation purposes at all. It's supposed to be visual and to create a separation and interface to the adjoining property.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the panel? All right.
Were we going to ask the architect?
Yes, he's here.
The architect, Mr. McCormack, is with me as well. Yes.
All right. Well, before we...
Did you want to say something, Mr. before we ask questions?
Well, I think Jared's covered a lot of the issues incredibly well. So both of us are really here to answer any questions that the panel might have about the project.
Really. Unless you want to raise the conditions.
If the panel is inclined to support the application, I was wondering if I could take the panel to two conditions of consent which we'd like changed or deleted if possible.
Well, before we do that, there are some fundamental questions that the panel has to ask you. Again, I invite Mr. Hawke to raise these questions.
Yeah. Look, I have concerns about the driveway, and I appreciate that this is probably the only spot that you can put it in, but there is no planting there whatsoever. Do you think that it would be feasible to install a green wall on the ground floor showroom and fire stair wall to the left of the driveway?
That's certainly doable. I mean, it's got a favourable orientation because it orientates north, so it would support vegetation rather well. I don't see any objection to that.
Okay, thank you very much.
And perhaps Mr. Teruzzi or the architect may wish to respond to the concerns about the roller door and the intercom. Is there capacity in terms of height, et cetera, to put in?
I believe there is. We're required to have a minimum 2.2 metre clearance for that driveway, and I'm looking at. I can take the panel members to drawing 0201, which is a long section through the development, which cuts through the driveway. It's essentially the northern elevation. And we have made some provision to house the roller shutter, as you can see with the fold in the slab above the roller door. If we adjusted the depth of that front edge of the planter box slightly, then I'm sure that we could get a panel lift door in there. And still achieve the minimum height requirement under Australian standards.
And I suppose the other question is the location of the intercom. Is that probably in a position to where it'll be? How tall will that boundary fence there be where the intercom is?
It's 1 metre.
We indicate that it's only 1 metre high, probably for the first 5 or 6 metres back into the site. I know from recollection there is a higher fence there at the moment between number 6 and our property. The reason we have limited that first 5 or 6 metres to 1 metre is really just to avoid, I guess, the appearance of a side boundary within the setback to the front setback to Hawthorne Parade properties. That's why we've kept it low, and it's not until you get beyond that intercom position that we presumably step up with a higher fence. It's really to protect the streetscape of Hawthorne.
Now, I understand that. Is there any possibility of having the intercom located a little bit further towards the door as such?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's possible. I guess my hesitation is that we're starting to get onto the steeper part of the ramp. The first 6 metres of that ramp is a gentle incline at 1 and 20. Easier, obviously, to stop and interface with someone in the building. But if it moved another 2 metres into the site,
yep,
the car would still be on the 1 in 8 incline, partially on the 1 in 8 and partially on the 1 in 20. So I think that would still be acceptable.
And then the wall in that location would be a bit higher, I would have thought.
Yeah, and the intercom would move down in a downward direction with the ramp. So, best of both worlds.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I'd like to ask a question.
Yes.
Mary Lynn Taylor, the neighbour was concerned at that high wall and the treatment as it impacted on his heritage property, and was wondering why there was no landscaping within the driveway there to have some impact to soften the impact of that wall. Is that not possible?
In terms of responding, when you look at the ground floor plan, the objective was to bring the planter box pretty much at the entry of the where the roller door would be, or the access to the basement. As we explained a moment ago, when one of the panel members raised, could we put a vertical wall, garden wall, to soften that up? I mean, that's something we can introduce along.
But that's on the other side. That's not on the side of the house.
Yes, understand that. But with the fence basically being at that entry point, only being 1 metre high, you would get the benefit of visually seeing that green wall as well.
Not from the house, you wouldn't. You'd only see it from the footpath, or if you're standing in that particular corner.
Is there an opportunity to put anything through there? Is that the driveway kicks back in there?
The challenge we have is achieving the double width, so that we have cars entering and leaving, passing each other, and the challenge is that there's not a lot of opportunity for moving the. We're currently, the two stairwells are at the Hawthorne end of the scheme, moving them closer to Parramatta Road. It's to achieve an extra metre, because we're also using that area for collection of garbage and so on. But if we did have landscaping in that area, it would be extremely narrow, probably less than 900 wide. And then allowing for structure, it would be probably the soil depth, soil width would probably be 600.
We could put a vine on a trellis type.
We could grow something along the fence.
We could potentially do a trellis type of environment in that area and allow a vine to actually grow along that trellis environment. So that would actually soften it directly on the boundary.
The other, if I may...
I think this is very important.
Yeah, if I may just add, also the other complication is if we introduce landscaping right to the what would be the apex of the boundary of number six, is that we have some challenges in terms of sight lines. In accordance with Australian standards, sight lines to the footpath. Hence, another reason for keeping the fence in that corner as low as possible.
Well, if it's 1 metre high, your landscaping doesn't have to be very high either.
Well, if it's limited to, if the panel's comfortable with the landscaping being limited to the similar height, then that would be okay. I'm just highlighting that as a potential.
I suppose the advantage of having the fence lower in that location is, as you said, for sight lines and to reduce the bulk. And then you have the visibility of the green wall behind it, which is only then set back a few metres on the other side of the driveway.
Yes.
6 metres, isn't it? What's the width of the driveway?
Probably in excess of 6 metres. It's closer to 7.
Yeah, it's not very close in looking. It'll be nice for somebody walking towards Parramatta Road on the footpath. That's about it.
But as I said, there's an opportunity, as we acknowledge, that we can soften the northern wall on to the driveway, but there's also, as we've stated, there's an opportunity to soften that fence, because as we said,
I think both would be appropriate.
Yes, and there's no reason why we couldn't put a trellis system and wire type system and actually have a creeper which grows along that section. That would actually certainly soften that wall or that fence line, so there is actually a landscape perception along that boundary.
Thank you.
Any other questions, panel? All right. Now, you want to raise a couple of proposed conditions.
Thank you, panel chair. I take you to condition 37A. Sorry, 38A. Apologies.
Yes.
Read it while you're looking to that. The basement must be fully tanked to prevent ingress of subsurface flows. Given that the basement is being built to all boundaries, that's physically impossible to achieve. A fully tanked system means that you can actually membrane and waterproof to the outside of the structure. So I'm simply asking the panel to consider the removal of that condition because it's at odds with the scheme. And similarly, if I can then take you to condition 40D, a charged or pump out stormwater drainage systems are not permitted, including the roof and so on. But the first part of that condition, given that we can't have a fully tanked system, essentially what that means is the basement, in layman's terms, will leak. That's the way they're designed. So essentially we do have to have a pump out stormwater system to drain water that is allowed to come into the basement and then to have it pumped out. So they're really the only two conditions. They're engineering conditions, which we'd just like the panel to consider are removing given the nature of the project.
Any questions from the panel about those two conditions?
No.
All right. Well, that is noted. If there are no more questions, then all I can do at this stage is thank you all for your input. We will consider what's been put to us in due course and publish a determination in due course. So thank you all for that. And we can move on to the next item.
Thank you.
All right. The next item is the proposed Torrens Title subdivision and erection of a dwelling on each lot at 26 Florence Street, St. Peter's. Again, I have noticed that there is a number of people who wish to address us on this item. First is Mr. Lychenko. Are you here, Mr. Lychenko?
Hi, Mr. Lychenko. My name is Jackie Bolt. My mother and my children live at 24 Florence Street. And Mr. Lychenko sends his apologies. He's caught up in an LCP matter which was supposed to finish at 12:30 and is still going on. So I will be representing myself.
All right, well, you proceed.
So our concerns are... Originally, our house, Mr. Lysenko designed our house. I just wanted to highlight that we do live in a semi. So all of our light comes from the side where the proposed building will be. And our concerns were the size of it, because it is quite vast. If you have a look at the plans, it's very, very high. It's long and it's close. If you can see the submission that Mr. Lysenko put in, he's done a little sketch that shows one of the things that seems to be referenced quite a bit is that the size of it and the architecture is going with two other properties, number 31 and I think it's number 8, which are the same. And you can see with Mr. Lysenko's sketch that it is the one that will be next to us, 26, will be considerably, is higher. But the most pressing thing for us is the entry. So if you can see the plans for it, the garage... the way that it looks on the plan, the garage is off the boundary a little bit, but the biggest concern was that the top story is still flush to the boundary. And because we aren't the same as number 31 and number 8 in that our entrance is from the side, so we don't come in from the front. We come in from the side. We go down a little side passage that is quite tight anyway, and we come into our doorway there. In my architect's words, he thought that it was quite cruel that someone would want to build something so close because it's, as he put here, a blatant disregard to further compromise seriously, visually and psychologically the dwelling entry by proposing a two-storey solid wall along this section of the boundary. So that was our main concern. I can't think of anything else because this is the first time I've done this. Have we got everything?
May I ask you, are you from number 24?
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. And the way the height of like that front bit there at the height of it, that's the bit where there is glass there all the way along for us to get natural light. Yeah. And that will be. And unfortunately, it's 3 o'clock when we get all that beautiful afternoon sun, which is the cutoff time for the shadowing and things like that. But it is just really the height. And the fact that it's going to be so close on that top story. Nick was saying that Mr. Lysenko, sorry, was saying the garage, there is a proposed sort of like a void area there that they've put on the bottom. But he said that that's going to be neither here nor there because you still will have the top story that is right up overhead as you're coming in and it will make it very dark.
Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for your time.
Is that
yes, yes. Oops.
Sorry, I was on mute. Thank you very much for that. And the next name I have is Mr. Peter Erling.
Yeah, hi. I'll just say for Jackie, so what you want, Jackie, you'd like to have that two-storey brick wall set back 900 from the boundary, not on the boundary, and that could be done by just internal arrangements of the bedroom that has a void area over the staircase. So there's a way the architect could easily resolve that and give you that sense of space. So for 28 Florence Street, it's where I live on the other side of the 26. We've also renovated in the past. We have a first floor. We renovated on the footprint of our existing home, so we didn't extend backwards. Our problem with this development is that, well, like Jackie, we are having a brick wall on the boundary at the front of the building, which we can live with because that's our driveway abutting that and it's a carport for us. So we don't have a problem that they're going to put a two-storey brick wall on our boundary. We do have a problem with the extent of the rear setback of the proposed. Excuse me, that it is about 3 metres beyond our building setback. And because of that and the height, which Jackie pointed out, Mr. Niklasenko pointed out that number 30, this proposal is higher than the number 31 across the road, which it uses as precedent to argue why it should be given consent. The 3 metre setback will, and the height of the building that's proposed will cause a large loss of daylight and sunlight for the back of our house. In the morning, and we're talking about in winter, obviously, we'll lose all our sun off the back of our house. So our living space is downstairs at the back, our kitchen, our dining, our lounge room area. And we'll also lose all the light from the windows of the ground floor, which is that living area, a bedroom, which doesn't count really. But so we are going to suffer that loss of light. What we would ask for as a condition is that they pull that rear setback of the first floor into alignment with our building, which will let light come in through in winter into our back private open space. And also by the original proposal, there was a first DA that came in 2018, which was rejected by council on the basis of mainly of overshadowing and also a lack of information that they provided to support their application, which they addressed with this current application with a statement of environmental effects, much more comprehensive. But the original application was set back 1.5 metres from the boundary on the first floor. Now they have amended it and gone to 900 off the boundary. So I don't know how council report comes up with that they've improved and made it better than what it was that was rejected originally, in the sense that they've come closer to the side boundary. So and the height has actually not changed. They've changed the roof shape slightly, but the actual height of the roof has not changed. What has changed is they have, from being 5 bedrooms in the first proposal, they've come back to being 4 bedrooms upstairs. And that has brought the rear setback further in, but still it's 3 metres beyond our building and we'll lose a lot of light. So at my architect here, I believe Peter Smith will speak as well. He's done shadow diagrams that show the impacts and that there is a way of addressing those impacts that we would agree is acceptable to us. And so the application could be approved with the condition that they move that rear setback of their building back in alignment with our building. And also, ideally, they would have the 1.5 metre setback, which they can achieve because they have ample floor space. They do have floor space ratio to play with. It's a big site. If they take something off the top floor, first floor, they can move it down to the ground floor and still have the number of bedrooms which they want. Apparently, the number of bedrooms is the golden goose. They want to have as many bedrooms as possible.
That's 3 minutes, Chair.
So they could move a bedroom or a bathroom from upstairs. There's a bathroom and an ensuite bathroom. So they've actually, it's quite a luxurious home they're proposing. They can still have that, but move the emphasis to the ground floor, not the first floor. Thank you.
Any questions from the panel?
No.
No? All right, then we'll hear from Mr. Peter Smith.
Yes, good afternoon, panel. So I'm advising kind of Peter Erling, kind of, and I prepared a submission, which I'm sure you've received, that detailed some of the shadow diagrams that Peter was just talking about. As Peter mentioned, the previous application did have an up-level setback of 1.5 metres. What is proposed now does actually cast significant shadow kind of over Peter's living room windows and also kind of the rear courtyard as well. The DCP has provisions that are designed to protect exactly that, the solar access to living rooms and the solar access to private open space. And the DCP provisions also speak to shape the side setback being appropriate and a merit assessment made to minimise kind of solar access impacts, and also the rear setback also having a merit assessment to minimise kind of those solar access impacts and taking an alignment that is consistent with the alignment of adjoining properties. The alignment of the rear setback they have taken is an alignment that matches a new development much further down the street kind of than the adjoining property. If the proposal was amended to have the upper floor setback increased to 1.5 metres and the rear setback increased to roughly align with our neighbouring property, there'll be substantial kind of benefits to Peter's solar access. And it seems only reasonable that solar access is preserved. It's not really preserved. He would still be losing solar access compared to what he currently has, but it would actually achieve the minimum kind of solar access requirements under the DCP. And the solar diagrams I've prepared kind of show where I've marked them as being original, that is the application as it stands before you kind of today, and where I've marked them as amended on that second page indicates a 1.5 metre setback at the upper level and an increased setback to the rear. The areas I've highlighted in orange with the orange circle show the increased solar access kind of available to the rear courtyard. And the areas I've highlighted in the maroon circle show how that currently solar access to the living room window is only available from 2 till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. By increasing that setback at the upper level from 900 to 1.5, you can receive solar access to that living room window from 1 p.m. through to 3 p.m. being the 2 hours, which is the standard in the DCP.
All right. Any questions, panel?
No, thank you.
No questions? All right.
Thank you. No.
Thank you for that. Now, is Mr. Anthony Charbel here? Mr. Charbel?
Hello? Hello?
You're very faint.
Hello?
I can hear something, but I can't see anything.
Mr. Charbel, we're having difficulty both hearing and seeing you. Hearing and seeing you.
Hello?
Now we've got you. All right.
Okay, how are you going? Anthony Charbel, Steve, concern from
Can you turn up your volume? We can hardly hear you.
Can you hear us now?
Is that better?
That's better.
Yes.
Right. Proceed.
I've registered to address the any panel questions or anything like that. If there's any, if you want me to run through the proposal and the history of the proposal, I'm just basically registered.
Obviously. Can you speak up a bit more, please?
We're in support of the council recommendation, and we've registered just to address any questions or queries from the panel.
Could we invite the draftsman to respond to the concerns that he's heard from the neighbours?
Yes, please. Mr. Charbel, what do you say about what has been put to us by the neighbours?
Okay, so in regards to Jackie, who was the number 24, Florence Street.
Yes.
Which has the side entrance.
Yes.
So we had spoken to Jackie, and one of the ideas that we've come up with that we want to put forward was to build a column at the front entry and then build a column at the rear of the zero boundary wall, and then have a lightweight infill, which will provide that openness down that side pathway. Now, the overall, I guess, 1.5 to 2 storey one-litre milk carton shape is only about 6 metres long, which is the length of the garage, and provides that built form, that cottage built form. And what we were doing is, one of the other items that we were addressing was the overland flow path, and that's why there is a setback from that garage to the boundary. And what we thought was, while being able to maintain the presence of the cottages to the streetscape, what we'll be able to do is maintain the column at the front, open up a portion of that 6 metre wall at ground level, and then have a column at the back. So that way the presentation to the street is maintained. We open up the side egress for any visitors or the owner occupiers. And then that way at that level, they'll have that openness. And then in terms of Peter, who is number 28, I don't agree with Peter Smith's comments, or I don't have the shadow diagrams in front of me, but I've done multiple modelling at looking at additional setbacks on the side for the first floor. And one of the main reasons that we changed the proposal, because the original proposal was about 2 metres longer on the first floor. And what we decided to do was reduce the length of the building on the first floor and encroach on the side setback to 900. Basically, what that allows on this width of site is a hallway, a 3 metre bedroom and a wardrobe. Now, if I were to eliminate that wardrobe to increase the setback to that 1500, what will happen is I'll have a 2.4 metre by 3 metre bedroom. Or what I would have to do would be to tack on the wardrobe to the 3 metre length, and then I will be back where we originally started, and it'd be quite longer on the upper level. The solar access diagrams that I've prepared and the modelling that I've done, if we were to entertain a setback of even 1800, what we have 2.7 ceilings downstairs, we have 2450 ceilings upstairs, and we're excavating almost half a metre. And I think that's why it's repeated in the report that we've exhausted the options in terms of siding the building, its heights, and we have a low slung pitch roof on that. Now, there was some flexibility that I could probably bring that ridge down another 300, 350 mil, but that doesn't contribute. It's the actual end wall. We have no eaves, and we're working to the minimum that's possible. So in terms of the solar access, it does get that solar access late in the afternoon, but in the morning, the sun is perpendicular to that northern elevation of number 28. Now, it doesn't matter what we propose, and even if we narrowed the building up and introduced the 1500 setback, I don't believe, and I've I've got my modelling here that would increase the solar access to that window. Now, one of the other options that we did look at was maybe some sort of a reduction in or creating a niche in that in our southern elevation, northern elevation, the Peter. And the issue is that where we try to implement that and try to work a functioning and a well-formed floor plate on the upper floor, that there isn't that much benefit. We're talking about maybe 15 minutes to half an hour. So what we were trying to do was from the original proposal to now, it was always considered. And that's why we're cutting the land back. That's why we're working the 2,700 ceiling heights downstairs. That's why we're working the 2,400 ceiling and have a low slung pitched roof on the upper floor. So we have considered it. It's unfortunate that the site is orientated in the way that it is. And we've done everything possible, we believe, to address those concerns. Now, that's in terms of the solar access to the window. In terms of solar access to the private open space at the back, our solar diagrams are quite clear and shaded in blue where we increase or contribute to solar overshadowing over the rear private open space. And the only portion of the solar, the private open space that gets overshadowed is between a carport and the rear building over the driveway. Everything else that's shown in yellow is existing structures on number 28.
They're actually not there. Your drawings are incorrect. You show things that are not in our yard. And simple look at Google Earth will show that. You've drawn in things that are not there on our building. That's why we had our own shadow diagrams made. So, Anthony, sorry. Not true.
Well, look, what I will do is we'll hear Mr. Charbel out. Then we'll...
Sorry.
Revert to Mr. Smith, who prepared his own shadow diagrams and
sure.
comments. So we'll hear you out first, Mr. Charbel.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so if you look at the solar diagrams from 9 a.m. On page DA12.
Yes.
Which page was that?
DA12, DA12. Revision C, or page 149, sorry. After taking the page 3812.
You proceed, Mr. Charbel.
Yeah. So the items highlighted in the next, I think it's about five or six pages, anything that's highlighted with a blue shading is the additional shadows from the proposed development. Everything that's highlighted in a yellow is existing, and anything highlighted in brown is from the existing building. Anything in yellow is the adjoining. As you make your way through the shadow diagrams, it's pretty clear that shadows either fall on a structure or in the slither between the building and the carport structure at the back. The primary open space for number 38, that is between the carport structure and the northern boundary, on the southern boundary on number 28, is overshadowed by its own buildings. It doesn't have anything to do with the proposed development. And as the sun moves around from 12 o'clock onwards, you can see that there's no blue shading at all in the private open space area of number 28. So I'm not sure if why we're talking about the private open space and the overshadowing or impact of our proposal over the private open space. We do shadow the northern wall of number 28. We do shadow the driveway. But we don't overshadow the private open space.
Before I go back to Mr. Smith, any questions from the panel? No questions from the panel?
No.
All right, can I come back to Mr. Smith? Are you there, Mr. Smith?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Have you heard that statement from Mr. Charbel?
I have. And I might just take you to those shadow diagrams that he prepared to point out a couple of things. If we look at the one on kind of drawing DA12, which shows the shadow diagrams between 9 and 10 a.m.,
yes.
And I agree with Mr. Chabelle that kind of really the morning is the critical time at which my client receives solar access kind of to his rear garden. Firstly, I'd like to point out that the carport structure that he's shown there with the solid roof is actually a shade structure, not a carport structure. And so it does actually let kind of sun kind of into that space. It's not a solid kind of element. But if you look at the sun at diagram at 10 a.m., you'll see that there's a large blue area kind of between kind of that shade structure and the existing dwelling. That is a part of the rear terrace that currently receives sunlight and would not receive sunlight kind of as a result of kind of the proposed development in the first floor extending past kind of the end of our building. So if the two aligned, that part of the rear garden would receive solar access. Also, kind of when you, because of the nature of that shade structure, kind of as you move later on into the day, kind of areas of the first floor kind of still continue to cast shadow kind of over that kind of shade structure, that pergola structure, and also kind of in that gap between kind of those structures as well. So that's where we lose solar access kind of in the rear private open space compared to the solar access that is provided at the moment. And by pulling back the top floor a distance from of 600 millimetres, so from a 900 setback to a 1500 setback, that does result in a effective lowering of the shadow kind of line cast on the facade, on that north-facing facade. And when you look at the top, that first floor plan on DA11, you'll see the rooms are arranged such that you have a hallway, you have wardrobes, and then you have bedrooms. That 600 millimetres of the wardrobe can be removed to enable kind of that wall to be pulled in, and then the wardrobe, rather than kind of running lengthways along the site, could actually run perpendicular kind of to the boundary. And that way you'd still be able to accommodate kind of rooms on that upper level that are of a reasonable dimension. So there is an achievable outcome there that can provide both the accommodation requirements with good amenity kind of for the proposal, but also improve the solar access kind of to my client's site.
Sorry, Peter.
Sorry, I'll ask the panel first. Any questions, panel?
No.
No?
Sorry, can I just address that last
one? Yes, you proceed.
So I mentioned it earlier that the original proposal was orientated in that form. Where
can you speak up a little bit, please, Mr. Charbel?
The original proposal was orientated in that form where we had the bedroom and then we had the wardrobe, bedroom, wardrobe, or wardrobes back to back. Now, we currently have 3.6 by 3.2 bedrooms. Now, if we move that wardrobe and move the wall in, we have a 3-metre bedroom. When I attack that wardrobe on, I then extend the building to maintain at least at a minimum a 3-metre by 3-metre bedroom. Now, that's at a minimum, and we're talking apartment minimum. We're not talking about a two-storey or semi-detached dwelling minimum. So if we were to add the wardrobes to those three bedrooms in that orientation or in that form, we end up blowing out the back wall by another 1,800, which is where we were originally. So that's why we pushed that in. One of the other options that I brought up to Jackie and Peter was that in bedroom four, we're willing to absorb the hallway because bedroom four absorbs the hallway, that we're willing to push in that bedroom four, that 1 metre of the corridor, and have another articulated step, which then that last portion of bedroom four is set in 2 metres and 60 from the boundary. So that was one of the options that we put forward. So the two options are that we orientate it as it is, and we set bedroom 4 in because it absorbs the hallway, so that bedroom forms the 3x3.2 that we have. And then that way they have a setback for that last bedroom. And then the other option was that we lighten up the brick wall on the boundary on Jackie's side, and then have your traditional fence. And then therefore that approximately 4 to 5 metre gap in the middle, we'll have a brick column at the front, a brick column at the back, and then that will lighten up the entry access to Jackie's side. And then and both Jackie's and Peter's will set in bedroom 4 off the boundary. But to reorientate the bedrooms the other way with the wardrobes going down the site, we end up pushing the bedrooms out, or we end up having 2.4-metre bedrooms.
So let me understand this. In relation to bedroom 4, you're proposing that the distance from the wall to the boundary by increased by how much?
It'll be increased by a metre. A metre 60.
Wall setback, additional 1 metre.
Yeah.
I follow.
Yeah, and then we're thinking of building it in lightweight instead of brick veneer. So then we pick up 106. That's about 1160, sorry. 1160. So total setback should be 2060 from the boundary for bedroom 4.
2060 metres from boundary.
Yeah, on both sides.
On both sides.
Yeah. So that way, bedroom 4 will replicate bedroom 3 and bedroom 2 in terms of size.
Yeah. And
bedroom 4 absorbs the hallway because it's the last bedroom. We'll push it in. So therefore, that hallway that bedroom 4 picked up will form part of the setback.
I understand.
Yep.
I understand. Any questions, panel, on that point?
No, thank you.
No.
I haven't really understood what's happening at the front to number 26.
24, I think.
You mean 24?
No, I'm thinking 26 as it affects 24.
All right. Yeah, Mr. Charbel, do you mind if I go? What you're suggesting that is on the ground floor, that there is a void, you actually set back that wall, and there's just two columns, and then the first floor is over that. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, correct.
You're going to give us an aid, are you?
Yeah, well, I can hold it up on camera.
Yep.
Yeah. We're replacing the brick wall with the columns.
Am I able just to respond to that, just to highlight?
No, let me just make sure that we understand what it is before. Okay. Yeah.
So remove that portion.
Mm. Right.
And then that will just be your traditional fence. Mm. So the first meter and then probably the last meter, I can make it even less at the back, but at the front, I really want to maintain that first 1 meter, which aligns with, you can just see the recess above, and then just maintain that form or presentation to the street. And then I can open it up, and even the back, probably structurally, maybe 350 or 470. We can use the back, and then at least a meter at the front. And then that whole space in between up to the underside of the first floor will be removed and just replaced with the timber fence or color bond fence, I think Jackie has, I'm not sure.
But the top story would stay the same. So the top story, which would be just above where the fence line is right along the border.
We don't get our light from the bottom floor. There's actually already a fence completely covering that bottom floor. So even if you did have nothing there, which is what you're proposing, I think with a column, we have a fence there anyway. That's not where we get our light. We get it from
the top. It comes in that way.
So the measurement of that opening will be just under 3.3 metres. So 3.3 metres high by approximately 4.5 metres long.
The top elevation is still blocking where the sun comes. Like it's the you still have the elevated level. You've got a void on your plan. There is a void there as you come up the stairs, which I'm guessing is for aesthetics. And when you were in discussion with Mr. Lysenko, I believe that he made that suggestion that you wouldn't lose that much space because the void could consume that space if you brought the elevated level over and match it to the same as the lower level, which from street, from the front, would look good as well.
Well, we understand that. I mean, we've read what Mr. Lysenko has said, and we understand his proposal. And we will take it on board and consider it when we consider the matter in private. Do the panel members have any further questions of Mr. Charbel?
Mr. Charbel, would you just mind reiterating your thoughts about actually if we did set it back next to 24, would there be an opportunity to use the void, and would the garage work?
The currently now, the way that the building, am I on mute? No.
No.
So currently now, one of the main issues that council raised was the presentation to the street. Now, the original proposal had garages on both sides. We fell short of having a parking space out the front of the proposed by about 200 to 300 millimetres, with some concerns for council's engineers. So we eliminated the driveway and the garage towards number 28, and we've maintained the garage. We're utilising the existing... Oh, we have to remodel the existing driveway, but utilising the existing driveway. One of the issues was the dominance of the garage in the elevation and maintaining a typical form. Now, the form that we've run with is typical of the last two approvals in the street, number 31 and number 8. They're both built to boundary. They both have garage or hard stand at the front, depending on their building alignment with the neighbours. If we were to move the first floor in, then basically we have 1 metre door and 3.5 metres of garage. What I've proposed is to maintain the full width of the property, and that way the material of the garage door is consistent for the facade. And then it's also what we've done is replicated that on the opposite side. And we've come out with quite a dominant entry structure. If we were to narrow the left-hand side of the building down by 1 metre, I don't know exactly what the gain would be for number 24. And then I believe that we will have a taller, narrower building form. And then I have to look into the dormer window. I have to look at our entry structure and see what repercussions that has.
Okay, thank you.
Right, any other questions for the panel while we have Mr. Charbel on the line?
Thank you, ma'am.
All right, thank you all for your input. We will consider what's been put to us and publish a decision in due course. Thank you very much. And with that, we can then move on to the third item on the agenda, the proposed development at 39 Hubert Street, Leichhardt. We have Mr. Brad Delapierre, who is registered to speak on that matter. Mr. Delapierre, are you there? We can't hear you. You have to unmute.
Yes, he is.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and panel members. Yes, I am here, and as you outlined, I'm the town planner for the applicant for this proposal. As outlined in the assessment report before you, this application seeks approval to demolish effectively an uninhabitable and dilapidated dwelling and construct two new dwellings on a 303 square metre lot. The development complies with all primary planning controls other than the allotment size. And for the reasons outlined in the clause 4.6 in the assessment report, the variation to that is appropriate. So effectively, as I said, I'm mainly here to answer questions of the panel. And that's, a very brief overview, and happy to answer any questions panel members may have.
I take it you're happy with the recommendation, Mr. Delapierre?
Yes, that's correct. I support the recommendation for approval and we're accepting the proposed conditions.
All right. Any questions from the panel?
No.
No questions.
All right. Well, then, I think you could assume, Mr. Delapierre, that the recommendation will be adopted when we adjourn to consider the matter in private. And there are no questions, so I thank you for your attendance.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. What I propose now is that we move on to the last item, item 8, because that is the only matter in which we have a registered speaker. Is the panel happy with that?
Yes.
All right. Yes. So we'll skip forward to item 8.
Hello, can you hear me? Hello?
And
hello?
Mr. Crillo.
Excuse me?
Yes.
Sorry. My name is Martin Jarvis. I should have been on your list to speak about 39 Hubert Street. I live at 37 Hubert Street, and I did register to speak today.
We don't. I'm sorry. That's the last item. For some reason or other, I don't have your name down as a registered speaker.
I did register on Sunday. I was surprised I didn't get a confirmation, but I did register.
We will hear you. First of all, we should have your name and who you represent.
Yes, I have put in a submission. My name's Martin Jarvis. JARVIS, and I live at 37 Hubert Street, so adjoining the proposed development at number 39.
Yes.
Just very briefly, I guess my concerns are, and I've already submitted this to council, I'll have a very significant loss of light in my bathroom and kitchen, which the windows are actually on the boundary. There is shading diagrams, and the plan does concede that I will in fact lose this light, and it's a real concern, because at the end of the day there is a minimum subdivision size of 200 square metres. Once this land is divided or subdivided, there'll be 151 square metres in size. So basically you're trying to cram two fairly large houses onto two very small blocks of land, and I'm going to pay the penalty by losing a lot of light into my house.
That is your
Page 175 has the council assessment of that application, Chair.
I'm sorry, I'm still looking for it. Yes, I have it. Mm. Yeah, thank you. So, Mr. Jarvis, you're on the south
side. Yeah, I'm number 37.
Sorry, I'm still trying to find it. You're on the southern side, I take it. Yes, I follow.
Yeah.
All right.
And on page 173, clause 3.9, solar access.
Thank you.
In the report, Chair.
Thank you very much. All right. Any questions of Mr. Jarvis?
No.
No, thank you.
No.
All right.
Okay, so I hopefully that will be considered anyhow as part of the approval process.
We'll take that on board when we consider the matter.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. All right, so I can now safely go to item number 8. And is Mr. Cirillo? Are you here, Mr. Cirillo?
I am, Chairman.
Good, thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I realise you've been going for some time, so I won't take up much time of the panel.
only to simply make myself available, and the architect also, Anthony Payne, is with us. He's available should you require any clarification of the architectural details. But we support the officer's recommendation, and thank you for your time.
All right. Any questions from the panel?
No questions.
All right. Well, I think you can assume that the panel will adopt the recommendation. There are no submissions, no objections, and the minor encroachment of the height control is limited to the exhaust stack. So I think you can safely assume that we will adopt the recommendation.
Thank you, Chairman. I appreciate your time and consideration.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
So with that, we can conclude the public meeting and adjourn to consider the matters in private.